The number of 11th and 12th grade males experiencing gambling problems, such as lying about how much they lost or being unable to control their gambling, rose from 8.3% in 2022 from 4.2% in 2018, according to the 2022 Wood County Youth Survey. March is Problem Gambling Awareness Month, and today I'm joined with Kyle Clark and Bella Ivoska from the Wood County Educational Service Center to talk about problem gambling and gaming prevention, including recent trends, how it can affect youth, stigma associated with this addiction, and how folks can access resources. Stay tuned for this month's Stigma Busters. Before we dive in, we want to share a disclaimer for our audience. The content we share on Stigma Busters can bring up a variety of feelings and thoughts, and the Wood County Alcohol, Drug Addiction, and Mental Health Services Board is here to help you. Sometimes, people may even have thoughts of suicide or self-harm when triggered, and that's okay. If you are experiencing these types of thoughts, please dial the Wood County Crisis Line at 419-502-HOPE. That is 419-502-4673, and you'll be connected to experienced counselors who can help you. You can also text 4HOPE to the crisis text line at 741-741 and be connected to a crisis counselor. Help is here.
Both for coming on today, Bill and Kyle here to talk about gambling prevention. So like I said, I don't know a whole lot about this subject, so I'm super excited to learn from you two today. But before we get started, why don't you each tell us a little bit about yourselves and how you kind of got involved into this arena?
Well, my name's Kyle Clark. I'm the Prevention Education Director at the Wood County Educational Service Center. We provide prevention education services to all 9 school districts in the Pennant Career Center. And gambling has become a notable issue with the casinos and racinos in the state. And so we evolved into that part of our prevention education programming back in, I think it was 14 or 15, Bill, if I remember right, when we first started asking some beginning questions. So that's me.
Okay. And hi, I'm Bill Ivoska, and I worked at Owens Community College my whole life. I was the vice president of student services there. But as an avocation on the side while I worked, I did a drug survey in Lucas and Wood County, looking at how much alcohol, tobacco, and other drugs kids were using from grades 5 through 12. Mm-hmm. And then Bill Donnelly from the CRC got me into mental health. And then Kyle got me into bullying and to adverse childhood experiences and things like that. We were always trying to track the mental health and addiction of youth. And then, like Kyle said, in 2009, when the casinos and racinos came in, the law said that 2% of their gross tax revenue had to go to prevention. Mm. So we were able to get some money to add into our survey gambling questions and start to see what's going on in the community in that sense as well. So kind of how we've been involved with it.
Yeah. And it's really, I know that the youth survey has really grown quite a bit from when it started, kind of based on what you're saying too. Right. It started, you know, a little smaller and it's really grown. And there's been a lot of data and follow up for that, right?
Mm-hmm. Well, it helps give Kyle some and his crew some direction rather than trying to shotgun everything. We can identify, for example, we remember when marijuana really went up and then started to come back down again. Mm-hmm. We were able to note before the vaping craze hit, we saw the very beginnings of it.
Yeah.
And Kyle was able to jump on that early in, as well. We identified all the issues in bullying. And you got a big grant for that. Actually, the survey has been used for grant money of about over $15 million, I think you've gotten in grant money.
I think we're at 12. Right?
12 million? Okay.
So still impressive.
Things like that. Yes. And now we're looking at the very beginnings of gambling and gaming. Yeah. And that's why we're here today.
Yeah, I'm excited to talk about that a little bit more because it sounds like, you're able to identify the other trends with bullying and with marijuana. And I'm thinking it'll probably be the same with gambling and gaming. You're starting to notice maybe these shifts and trends in that.
We are seeing it in our data, and Bill can probably talk more specifically about it, but we're seeing the number of hours that middle school and junior high kids are spending versus high school kids every night, every day on gaming. And from gaming, we're learning how closely tied that is to what they might see later at a casino and the way that things are set up. And you spin and you get to win certain things, and you can purchase extra protection and weapons and skins and things like that. And so, yes, we are seeing the similarities. But more than that, the good thing about the data that we have collected is that we can also show some correlational issues going on with gaming and gambling and how that affects whether they're using drugs and alcohol, drinking more, how much more likely they are to start thinking about suicide ideation, bullying, and other risky behaviors. So it just kind of falls right into the whole risky behavior prevention. It's just one more variable that we try to deal with in the education piece.
It sounds it's very helpful to kind of have that piece, and then it goes into those other areas as well. So, while we're talking, can you just explain a little bit about what the signs are that maybe gambling or betting or anything like that is starting to become an issue, whether it's in adolescence or adulthood? How do we know when it's starting to become a problem?
Well, I think let me start a little more broadly, just societally. We had all this regulatory change that brought the casinos and racinos in, and now we saw the regulatory change that just happened in January, where we have online sports betting. And so, you can't help but turn on the television and see nothing but commercials about this. And that's in the adult population. I mean, kids are seeing that, but adults and everyone is seeing that. I can remember when the casinos used to advertise all the time, and they don't seem to as much. And then for kids, they're getting hit with gaming commercials in their, in their social media worlds. So you can't help but trip over the temptation to get involved in gambling or gaming. And so the regulatory changes are one thing that changes the social landscape. But then all the advanced technologies of phone apps, you can download these in a heartbeat and spend your money and connect everything so quickly. So, just the fact that they're available, that there's access to it, is one big thing we've noticed. When you have access to something and it's right in front of you, you're more likely going to use it than if you didn't have access to it, because then you wouldn't be able to be around it. So you start to see some kids that play or adults that play. And that's fine. We're not against gambling. I mean, probably 80% of the United States gamble. They might not have any problem with it, of those who do. But then there are those people who get involved, and they have the signs where they just don't seem to stop. They'll keep on getting involved with it, spending a lot of time. We asked some questions on the survey. It's called the Nods Clip. Do you spend a lot of time planning and thinking about gambling? Do you have you ever tried to cut down and weren't able to? That's another indicator. Have you lied to your family and friends about how much time or how much money you've spent? And then a lot of people think one of the very key indicators of gambling addiction is, have you tried to chase your losses? Have you lost money and you just keep spending to try and get it all back and re-win it? So if you're finding those kinds of, if you're answering yes, I'm spending too much time, I'm lying, I'm chasing my losses, those are some of the things that you're starting to see that are probably indicating you might have a problem.
No, that definitely makes sense. And, with two any other, substance or anything else that anyone's using, like alcohol, for example, I can imagine it could start to become an issue if, you're lying, you're having those risky behaviors, overusing it to the point. And it sounds like it's very similar with gambling and gaming when it gets to the point where it's almost overtaking your entire life.
And like Kyle said, when in gaming, which is, so I don't know how old the listening audience here might be, but kids can play what they call Roblox and other kinds of games, and And we asked the kids, how many hours a night do you spend? And I think it was 60% of fifth and sixth graders spend 3 hours a night.
Wow.
I mean, that's think of how much time that, if you were playing piano, you'd be a virtuoso. But gaming is huge. And so, yeah, they're spending a lot of time with that.
Yeah, right. Mm-hmm. And especially for kids, too, you know, if you're putting money into gaming or gambling or, you know, spending that money, it's they don't have the understanding either of, like, the value of a dollar necessarily. Mm-hmm. So if they are just putting money onto this game, then they're spending all of their parents' money, right. On, I don't know if you spend money on Roblox or anything, right. But that could be an issue, too.
Some of the game makers create the game in such a way that you have to spend money.
Okay.
There's something called what we've tracked, what makes it dangerous is, you might be on this adventure. You've got your armor and your mm-hmm. sword, and you're going to charge up the hill and take the castle or something. And, mm-hmm. and so you need a new weapon. Well, if you can't get that weapon unless you either spend a lot of time playing and earn points and can do that, or mm-hmm. you could be going down your pathway and see what they call a loot box or a treasure chest. And mm-hmm. if I spend some money, I can tap that loot box, and maybe when I open it, there'll be a sword or something that'll help me win the game.
Okay.
And the game makers make it such that if you don't take advantage of that, you may never be able to beat the game.
Oh, okay.
So now kids are getting a credit card or somehow mm-hmm. and spending some money so they can get that that loot box and then win maybe a tool that will help them win the game. And of course, these are multiplayer games. So their friends are online too. They're seeing that, they got the sword. So I better get a sword too so I can beat this guy.
Right.
You know, and next thing you know, mom or dad, will you click $2 for this and $2 for that? You know, and then they're moving along. So it's kind of like the beginnings of this is with kids. So this is like, I always think of it as junior varsity for adult gambling.
Right.
If I'm training as a child like this, think of how perceptive I'm going to be when I get to become an adult.
Right. Yeah. I really like that analogy. Like, it's like the pre-work or, before you get to the big leagues.
Well, and we were able to do given like a little tour of a mm-hmm. virtual casino
okay.
recently mm-hmm. at the gambling conference a week ago when it was being held virtually.
Mm-hmm.
And then I was watching that to see how the people move around in this virtual casino and go up to different stations. And then happened at that weekend. I was watching my grandson mm-hmm. play with his Roblox, and he was building a virtual world.
Mm-hmm.
And it's exactly the same concept.
Oh.
So these kids get to a point in that world where they can easily make the transference to an adult casino at some point. Virtual.
Right, yeah.
They know how to navigate. Whereas you or I go into one of those the first time, we're lost. We don't know where to go.
Right, yeah. Yeah, when you're giving them that knowledge so early, so easy just to transition right into that. And I kind of want to talk about that too, like with, getting into adulthood or even I would think college students with the sports betting mm-hmm. and sports gambling, that's legal now in Ohio, and it's, kind of becoming huge. And like you were saying, I personally am seeing ads all the time for it
mm-hmm.
and, they're giving offers for
right.
free bets, and it's kind of like a gateway into it more. So I'm curious to see what you're thinking the trends are going to look like, because now sports gambling is becoming huge. And I'm curious to think, what do you both think is going to happen in terms of the future with sports gambling and youth, what that's going to look like?
Well, it's obviously going to go up.
Yeah.
I think whether it'll go up and sustain itself or, be a flip, it'll go up a little bit and then mm-hmm. people will get burned and they'll come back down. I don't know. But we're noticing, for example, if you look at disordered gambling or problem gambling,
mm-hmm.
And we track that amongst kids in high school
mm-hmm.
and the like. In 2015, that's 8 years ago, we identified that about 5% of high school juniors and seniors would have said, yes, I'm endorsing the problem gambling kinds of questions. That's now up to 8% last survey. So 5 to 8. And now that was before all this started. So now you've got problem.
Just 2 years' time.
Yeah.
Wow.
And we also looked at students at Bowling Green. We did a stratified random sample of Bowling Green students. And that rate went from 4.3 to 6, and now 6 to 7 in a span of 5 years. Amongst males, however, if you look at males at Bowling Green, it's at 13 and 14%. Males are a far greater risk of sports gambling and those kinds of things than are females. So that trend is occurring. Now, why I'm pausing a little bit, the FanDuel and DraftKings and the MGM Grand, all those kinds of things, you have to be 21.
Mm-hmm.
So a kid in high school can't get into that. You can't just sign up and do that.
Mm-hmm.
You can't go to Walmart and buy a credit card and get into DraftKings as a 17-year-old.
Okay.
There's too many protections, and those companies are too much at risk, I think, to allow that to happen. Now, that's not to say kids aren't ingenious enough to figure it out.
Right.
And so I think what you're going to start to see is the old analogy of when you were a kid and you wanted to get some liquor, you would stand outside until a 21-year-old went into the liquor store and you said, hey, will you buy me something? Well, I think that's what you'll see at Bowling Green, for example. You know, that underclassmen will know somebody who's 21, who's a senior, and they're going to be the bookie, so to speak, that'll pass all the bets for all these kids. So it's going to happen, but I'm not sure how easily it's going to be that all those things that we're seeing available are going to be for underage people. Now, that's the legitimate one. There's going to be illegitimate things that are going to come up that are probably overseas that don't care and won't be enforcing the age limitations. But we're going to start seeing an increase for sure, because it's just being too accessible, too normalized.
Right.
You know, people you don't even feel harm because they give you what, money back. If you lose your money, you're going to get a return. So the fear of harm isn't even there.
Mm-hmm.
And disapproval isn't even there. People don't seem to disapprove of it, you know, because it's normalized these days. And access available, non-disapproval, no harm, those are the things that usually cause things to go up.
And those are the same things that we do in prevention with anything. It's always about the fear of harm, peer approval, parent approval, access, whether it's drugs, alcohol, now gambling.
Mm-hmm.
It's the same game plan, and really kids will have the same strategies. Like Bill just alluded to, you'll either go to somebody who is old enough to do it for you, or you'll start seeing fake ID. All kinds of things will happen if kids want to get to it bad enough.
Right.
They'll find a way.
Oh, yeah. Kids will always find a way, to do the, quote, fun things.
We have to give them that chance to do it before we see the trend figure out. But we'll start on the survey this fall. We'll probably be figuring out some ways to ask into that and see what's happening.
Okay.
Now, and then I would like to say, Wood County finds themselves in a very unique situation because, and I'm going to go back in history here a little bit, but our Wood County Alcohol, Drug Addiction, Mental Health Services Board, the Adamus Board in Wood County, has always been concerned about youth and prevention education. And they gave us our initial funding to help start all of that. Along with that came, as Bill mentioned, the casinos and racinos and the law that said they had, the state had, the casinos had to provide the state 2% for treatment and prevention.
Mm-hmm.
And we've been able to use that to expand our survey to the point where, with gambling, so that Wood County is one of, I don't know if we are the only one, but we are one of the only largest group samples of youth gambling, gaming disorder stuff that has attracted national and international attention with some gambling research articles, to the point where we were just, we just had an article written and it was in the Wall Street Journal. But Bill can speak to that. He knows Derevinsky and all his others.
Yeah, one of the international
co-authors. Yeah. Don't let him fool you. He's even co-authored some of these reports.
Yeah.
Well, awesome. With their help, they're international experts. At McGill University in Quebec is Jeffrey Derevinsky and his team. He's the chair of psychiatry. Just kind of like Josh Grubbs here is in Bowling Green. He's a counterpart. And they have the team that really is into this and following it nationally. Derevinsky is with teens, Grubbs and Bowling Green, a little bit more on the adult side of things. But you're right, we have some great data. And Jeff and I have partnered to where he's taken our data and I'm helping with the methods, and his grad students are helping with the writing. And we've identified a lot of neat things and been able to help to lead some, maybe more of what psychologists or psychiatrists might be using, kind of where mental health falls in. Mm-hmm. How does your mental health help mediate Because every, you know, the relationship between gambling and other things, or bullying, how do those things all work mm-hmm. together? It's kind of what we've been after. So, yeah.
That's great. I mean, it sounds like you're getting a lot of good recognition, national, international. Yeah, sounds yeah. Like, yeah, that's awesome.
A nice publication.
So. We're also seeing a change in how youth identify themselves with society. And I'm getting into our questions about do you see yourself more valuable in a virtual world?
Oh, yeah, that was...
Let's talk about that for a second.
That was really a weird question. I asked the question, do you see yourself more valuable in virtual world as compared to face-to-face world? Now, isn't that something that you would think that? And yes, and more teens today said they see themselves as more valuable in the virtual world than in face-to-face. Now, some of the kids that are gaming a lot, that sounds kind of unusual. You know, wouldn't I rather be outside having fun with my friends than inside on a computer? But we have gaming scholarships, for example, at Bowling Green State University. So if I can be gaming and use it as like a sports team, I think Otsego, I think Perrysburg, a couple other schools in Wood County.
I think Lake and Rossford.
Have gaming teams. And then they can, if you can become sort of a professional gamer, you can get a scholarship to Bowling Green, to Ohio State, to UT, a couple other schools. And be on their intercollegiate gaming teams, get free tuition. So yeah, I could see there's value. There is true value to this now, and that's positive. It's when you get where you're spending, now you're getting into too much money maybe with it inside right. your game, or your game is, your time is being spent all on gaming and your grades go down.
Right.
And you lose your social skills because you don't have any friends. That's a problem. So there's positive sides to it, and there's always that negative side that we have to watch after. But that temptation we're clearly seeing is there.
Right.
That's the point.
Yeah, no, absolutely. I mean, it sounds like, you know, parents or caregivers, mm-hmm. teachers need to be a little, like, observe it and noticing right. if there's yeah. any shifts or changes in kids.
There's a new scale, Kyle, I was thinking about putting in. It's called positive play. Okay. You know, how much do people really know how to, are they learning the lessons on how to play in a positive way? Versus letting it get away from them,
mm-hmm.
like I said. So the positive play would be, can we teach them to be honest with their friends and their family and their significant others about how much money they're involving mm-hmm. or how much time they're involving with it? Are they making accepting personal responsibility for it? Or are they blaming it? You know, if I lose my money, do I just say, well, it's there? It's a game's fault.
Mm-hmm.
They don't even want to blame themselves. Mm-hmm. Do they make a pre-commitment, so to speak, like before I go, I'm going to only spend this amount of money, or I'm only going to be there for 2 hours, and when I'm done, I'm going to leave? Or do you chase your losses and you can never get out, right. you know, kind of thing? And do you have any gambling or gaming literacy, you know, cognitive thoughts? Some people have, they believe gambling kind of fantasies or fallacies, you know, like, if I have my lucky socks on, I'm going to win. Or
yeah.
I've lost 6 times in a row, so I always win on my 7th time, so I'm going to put $1,000 down. Their logic isn't right, and
right.
their cognitive is distorted. So if we can get into positive play and teach responsibility, teach honesty, teach pre-commitments,
mm-hmm.
Teach you know, literacy, like I said, those kinds of things might help parents and teachers and educators make our gamers and gamblers more responsible and
yeah.
able to enjoy it rather than let it get a hold of them. In a negative way.
Yeah. No, I really like that, the positive play, like mm-hmm. having those things in place.
Yeah, the state of Ohio has a theme in their advertising. It used to be a get set before you bet.
Yes.
Now they call it pause before you play. Same
okay,
idea, but
yeah.
think about what you're doing and get a plan
yeah.
before you get out there so that mm-hmm. you don't let it get carried away with you.
Yeah. Yeah, good tips, yeah, for parents when, you know, they're talking to their kids about this,
mm-hmm.
setting aside time for, you know, not gaming all the time.
Yeah.
You know, that good balance
yeah.
to have in your life. And, you
right,
know, we all
right.
need to remember that, right? I know I spend too much time on my phone, so I
well,
understand.
And parents can do that. They can set their phones where, you mm-hmm. know, to the kids where it's going to shut off. It's just not,
right.
there's not going to be any more
yeah.
time to it.
Mm-hmm.
They build those in
right.
games.
Right, exactly.
This episode is brought to you by the Wood County Educational Service Center. Their mission is to develop, deliver, and implement quality educational services and programs in the Wood County community. To learn more about their services, visit wcesc.org. Do you or someone you know need help with a gambling problem? Call or text the National Problem Gambling Helpline at 800-522-4700. For local resources, visit wcadamh.org.
So I want to talk a little bit about any myths or misconception with gambling and problem gambling. So I recently heard a stat today about people who are seeking treatment, and I don't know how accurate it is. I think it's a national stat about the calls to the National Problem Gambling Helpline in 2021. There was a 46% increase, actually, in people that were trying to seek treatment. However, I've also heard that there's kind of this stigma, misconception, that people don't want to seek treatment if they're struggling. It's something that they don't want to talk about. So I was curious if you two have heard of any of these myths or misconceptions in seeking treatment, or just any stigma that's associated with this.
You know, I was thinking about that question because I thought you might ask it, and I had this flashback, because this is how painful I think things are. When I was a child, my dad was a machinist, and he actually built his own tools. He was just really good at that. And he would say, "Billy, would you go get me a 3/4-inch wrench?" And I didn't know anything about tools. I was in a different world. I come back with a 7/8-inch wrench instead. And my dad would say, "What? That's not a wrong wrench. What's wrong with you?" And I felt so terrible. Like I was something was wrong with me. I didn't know how to identify the right wrench, you know. And it took a while till I got over that. So think of today. We talked about how gambling and gaming is fun. A lot of people go to casinos. People buy lottery tickets and have fun with it. They give them gifts sometimes in their cards. And then this gambling person with a problem comes along, and while their friends had fun with them, they go back and they keep playing and they lose money and they're lying and they're misleading people, and their friends probably look at them and think, "What's wrong with you? You know, are you broken?" Mm-hmm. And so the myth is that this is some, you know, it's a disease, as we know, mental illness is a disease. It's not a moral decision that I can't stop myself with this. And so I think one of the first myths is to realize that these people really need to have that education, like positive play. Mm-hmm. This is a behavioral addiction, which is different from, say, a substance abuse addiction, but still it's an addiction, and you need to learn some techniques that you can work along with it. And get positive treatment and not feel like I'm broken or I'm wrong and I'm morally degenerate because I'm doing this kind of thing. Right. It's probably my biggest feel of a myth.
And I think, too, we get into this whole thing with being positive role models. And our parents will say, you know, I can remember, you know, at home when I was a kid, and my dad's sitting there smoking cigarette after cigarette, telling me, "Don't smoke, don't smoke, don't smoke." Well, what are you really telling me there, Dad? I don't quite understand. And the same thing's true now. The best prevention is for parents to have a good role model that they're able to display to their children, and that if they're gambling, they're doing it responsibly. It's for entertainment. They talk about how you set limits. They educate their own children about how this works. But if they're telling their kids one thing but doing another, and the kids are seeing it as another activity, then they fall right into that.
Yeah.
And then the first thing you know, as Bill said, they start thinking, maybe I have a problem, and that stigma of getting help is not good. And it's a negative feeling. And then I think, too, a lot of we know that a lot of our folks who are experiencing gambling problems, it's not the issue that gets identified early on. Usually it's maybe through some other addiction. And so it's a co-occurring habit. Mm-hmm. And maybe the drugs and alcohol are more important to get fixed first than the gambling.
Okay.
So there's that stigma. They don't want to seek help for this because this is the one they know they've got to get first, or it's the one that they're being looked upon as having a problem with this issue and not this one. So it's kind of a multi-tiered layer of stigma almost with some of this.
Yeah, oftentimes these are co-occurring. So we've even heard from the therapists that the person will come in for an alcohol, tobacco, or other drug issue, and then unless they screen them for gambling, they wouldn't even know it. They might not even mention that mm-hmm. because they're more concerned about the first one.
Right.
Another myth, I think, would be, and now this is more like Kyle reminding me of it when your dad's teaching you to smoke and telling you not to smoke, how they learn the wrong cognitive thoughts. I mean, it all starts in your head. So if you have these cognitive fallacies that, and the problem with sports betting is, for example, that, you know, you can see all kinds of statistics on players and on teams, and you study these all the time, and you think, I am so good, I can beat this game, you know, because mm-hmm. I'm smart at it, and I've studied it. And they think that is actually, they don't realize this is a game of chance, not a game of skill, and that you're going to lose. Like I said, or that, you know, don't worry about how much money I'm going to spend, because I'll win it back, you know. Things that are not rational. That, like I was, I'm wearing my lucky socks today, I can't win, like I said. Things like that, did our parents teach us to think in that wrong way? Mm-hmm. Or somehow, you know, I'm thinking in the wrong way. So the myth, when we talk about it, the myth, the problem gambler has myths in their head mm-hmm. that we need to help them realize this, to get rid of that distortion and think more rationally about what they're doing.
Yeah. So a lot of that distorted thinking kind of brings about then these misconceptions of, well, if I'm not wearing my lucky socks, then mm-hmm. I'm not going to win. But if I'm wearing them, mm-hmm. then I'm going to keep winning, and I'm going to keep putting money into it.
Right. I've lost 8 times in a row. I'm about to hit it.
Right. Yeah. This next time. Yeah. Right. And kind of like to Kyle's point. Yeah. The other layers of it too, with drugs and alcohol mm-hmm. or any other mental health conditions. Yeah. It could definitely play into it. Mm-hmm. So if someone, you know, is kind of looking for any treatment, is there a particular type of treatment that's best suited for people who are struggling with gambling addiction, or is it very similar to any other addiction? Because, you know, you talked about it's more of a behavior versus like a substance.
Well, certainly, I think it's, we kind of already answered that mm-hmm. by showing the cognitive part right. of this is a real important. So the cognitive behavioral therapy or mm-hmm. dialectical therapy. And then there's something called motivational interviewing, where we just follow along and help the person to think through what they're doing. Would be important. But obviously, just having a good relationship with someone mm-hmm. that can help you is what starts, you know. We can give you the phone numbers of the helplines, the gambling helpline, or I think there's 211 is locally. And if you go online, there are tests that can tell you whether you think you have a problem or not. You know, it'll let you know if you're answering these kinds of questions, you probably do. Mm-hmm. Of course, if you're even going to that thing, you probably do. But having a good relationship with a therapist or somebody you can talk to and work this through is probably, I think, one of the most important things.
And then I think they have the same kind of process that Alcoholics Anonymous has. There's a Gambling Anonymous, I think, group, mm-hmm. and they go through the various stages once they begin to recognize the problem of how they can keep themselves on the straight and narrow and go from there. So
well, you kind of alluded to some resources, and I'll be sure to include those in the description of this episode, so you'll be able to check those out and have that information.
Some literature here, some numbers, the problem gambling hotline number, any of those on the state websites are all available.
Awesome.
And locally, I think the expert is Kyle, the Zeff Center.
Yes,
seems to be pretty good at this
treatment. Yes. Okay. Yes.
With gambling treatment. Look up Zeff. They seem to have cornered the market a little bit on being able to follow that up. But again, if you have a therapist that you're comfortable with, I think mm-hmm. that's the most important thing, because you've opened up and you're willing to seek help with someone.
Oh yeah. Absolutely.
And I think we've done a good job in the state with asking the casinos and racinos that have come in. They have to have posters and resources available in the casino to show you at every step of the way where you can get help if you feel that you're needing help.
Yeah.
And there's even help at the casinos now where you can go to the window and tell them, I'm here, I want to set a limit. Mm-hmm. And then they can't use their credit card in any of those machines to get any more money or tokens to be able to play.
Okay.
There's different ways that they can do that with you, work with you. And if you are experiencing problems, then I think it's even statewide. It goes into some
self-exclusion
database. Yes,
self-exclusion, where they want to let you in.
Yes. So there's different ways that they can get help. I think state prevention has done a great job at doing that. And of course, we're out here locally pushing the same thing. So, the biggest thing that I always try to leave anybody with drugs, alcohol, mental health, you name it, is my plea to legislators now and in the future. And that simply is always, always, always think through the legislation we're doing, because what we think we're doing as a nice thing for adults, or what we want to do as adults, can still have impacts on our youth, and it can have negative impacts on our youth. We have so much more brain science going on to understand how a developing brain matures, to know that a lot of the things we think are okay as adults are not okay to expose our kids to. And there's a lot of heavy ramifications that can occur from it. So I always say, please think it through, whether that's in not passing something, or whether that's in providing prevention monies for agencies to be able to use to help educate youth and parents on how to work with their youth on these things. So that's my plea. Yeah. I'll get off my band.
No, I'm a good ending. Okay.
Yeah, no, that was a great way to wrap it up. Well, thank you both for coming on. I really appreciate you teaching me a little bit more about this subject. Thank you so much.
All right, thank you.
If you want more Stigma Busters, be sure to subscribe and stay up to date on all our new episodes. Don't forget to rate us too and share our podcast with all of your friends. You can also stay up to date on all things stigma busting by following our social media pages on Facebook and Instagram. To learn more about some mental health facts, self-care tips, and more, listen to Stigma Busters wherever you get your podcasts.